what I experienced for the first time was appropriation, misappropriation, right? And making somebody look darker than they actually are to create a sale.
You're listening to Untamed, a podcast dedicated to empowering you, the lash artist, while providing insights on how to achieve success that is as individual and unique as you are. Each episode, me, Cheryl,
and me, Anne-Marie, share our best information openly, without reservation. We discuss challenges, best practices, and what the future holds for the lash industry.
So grab a snack and your comfiest sweater, and get ready to geek out with your new lash BFFs. Oh, and don't forget to subscribe!
Welcome back to another episode of the Untamed Podcast. Today, we have another special guest with us. Her name is Maria. And Maria is a diversity beauty expert and specializes in people of color spray tanning, which I think is absolutely incredible. And I can't wait to hear more on that as well. So today, we will be discussing challenges people of color have in the beauty industry as a customer and as a service provider. So stay tuned, because in this episode, you can expect to hear a raw conversation and how you can make a difference and help paint a more inclusive tomorrow. So without further ado, I would like to welcome Maria to the Untamed Podcast. Hey, Maria. Oh, we are so happy to have you on. Do you mind telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
So thank you. I am Maria Michelle Lee, a diversity in beauty expert and also a master spray tan artist specializing in spray tanning people of color. Yes, an industry that once thought that it was for a certain community of people only, but oh, are they so wrong? I've been in this industry going on 14 years now. I like to call it my back pocket ticket. I got into the industry because we have three beautiful jewels at home. I've been married to my best friend, my husband, for 27 years, but we've been together 29 years. Wow. So we have one daughter that is a former pro cheerleader. So cheerleading ain't cheap. A former track athlete who's now gone into film and television theater major. And then we have an up and coming, you know, cameraman. So for me, spray tanning was that thing. It paid for birthday parties up front and in full cash. Cheerleading was not a layaway option for us. So having that spray tan is my back pocket ticket. It just helped with the overflow because, as I said, we have three dreamers in this house and we want to make sure that their dreams come true. So really, really grateful for the spray tan industry, really grateful for the clients and the people who have, you know, been with me from the very beginning.
That's really incredible. Now, when you got into spray tanning, did you get into it with that first like group of people, you know, me, the very, very pale clientele, and then it developed into being more inclusive? Or is that something that was your goal from the beginning and you recognized that there was a benefit there? Can you take us through that journey?
Yeah, no, I got into it because my husband and I we had a fitness boot camp at the time. So in the training, and then I was a fitness competitor as well. My husband, he still teaches fitness to this day. So our clients, we would offer this service as an add-on, like if they did a transformation or if they're getting ready for a special event or a wedding or whatever, or they wanted to take photos and all of that. And my brother-in-law was a pro bodybuilder. So he had gotten with an organization that's an all-natural organization, and he helped head that up. And so he brought me in along to be the feature spray tan artist for these competitions. That's how that happened. So I got to spray tan on many different body types, many different shades of melanin. When I discovered how good it looked on darker skin tones, I was like, okay. So I started to perfect that and really train my eye for that, from everything, how to prep the skin, how it shows on the skin best, even the add-ons. So there was a product at the time, I don't even know if it's still around, called Dream Tan. So I got really skillful on how to apply that to the different skin tones to make it look like second skin, not to make it look like a patchy, streaky looking addition to the spray tan. So that's how I discovered it. And I've been stuck on it ever since.
That's really amazing. I think it's super unique. It's something that I wouldn't have really thought about. But then from your page, I've been so much more well educated to understand and see the benefits. And I'm like, oh, yeah. We all love that, like, perfect, like, even skin tone, a little bit of bronze. It just really, like, I know for me, I love a good spray tan. It really uplifts my confidence. And I really love that you're bringing more knowledge to that. You're not just looking for your clients and trying to get clients in for it, but you're trying to educate everyone else that, hey, this is a thing. Like, we can take up our own space and we are allowed to have a spray tan, and it looks damn good on us too.
It does.
My curiosity is that at what point did you start noticing that, or was it an event or like a catalyst that made you realize that there wasn't as much inclusivity within your industry? And what motivated you or inspired you to want to make kind of use a platform and make a change on that?
Yeah, I knew it for myself. So for the longest time, I kind of kept it to myself because I didn't think that it would have been welcomed in this industry. But it wasn't till a few years ago, I was on social media and I had seen a particular company spray tan someone who is of mixed race that was to be my shade. And no way this model should have been my shade. She should have been sprayed tanned in something that was matching to her skin. So I saw what I experienced for the first time was appropriation, misappropriation, right? And making somebody look darker than they actually are to create a sale. That floored me, because it was during the height of Black Lives Matter. It was coming into an era where we should know better now, and that means we should do better. But I wasn't going to get into this thing of cancel culture and berate and all of that. I wasn't going to mention that person's name. I still don't mention that person's name. I don't care what anybody has to say, because maybe this person didn't realize it. But how I knew it was wrong is because even watching the video, they had her in the video, but kind of sped by her. So they would spend time on the non-people of color, the white girls that, you know, have this glorious tan. And then when it got to her, it kind of sped by, because I'm deep that way. You could see in her face, you can see this isn't right. And how it was feeding back into the video, it totally looked like it was not the right shading for her. I don't care if you want to say it needed to pop in the camera. But yeah, so that's where my journey started there. And my really good friend Nia said to me, I hear you, Maria, but what are you going to do about it? And when I go on your page as a woman of color, going on your page, I need to see more of us on your page. And I said, you know what? You're right. I'm not going to gripe and complain about it behind the scenes anymore. I'm going to do something about it. So that day I got on and I told the story. I shared the experience and that moving forward, my page will not be the same and how I show up will no longer be the same.
Wow. That's a powerful story. You took being called out as kind of a moment for your transition into this career that you're in now. And it showed a lot of empathy. I think that that's one of the things, even when you're mentioning, you know, no cancel culture, it's kind of like, that's not really the direction that you want to go. It did show a lot of empathy. So speaking of empathy, I was wanting to kind of dive in a little bit more for like myself to learn more. And then for our listener to understand more as well, is what are some of the difficulties that artists of color experience in this beauty industry?
Yeah, the BIPOC community experiences a lot, from things such as being told, I don't know how to do your hair. I've never worked on this skin type before. Claire and I had an amazing conversation about a client being turned away for a lash lift because that other artist took a look at the hair on top of her head and thought that the curl pattern is the same. Like microaggressions upon microaggressions upon microaggressions. To be in this industry now, we are in 2022, to be in this industry now, if you don't know, ask somebody who has that experience, that who can train you and teach you, and be kind on both sides. You know, as a Black woman, if I walk into a salon and I see that they're mostly working on non-people of color and they don't have that training, that first thing I'm going to ask, not get upset, is, oh, why? You know, just asking why. Sometimes it's like their demographics, you know, but as you, if you want to stay in this industry, I personally think it's your personal duty, your due diligence to learn all skin tones. So not to get your hands up in a raise and you should, this is 2022 and kind of attacking, but just maybe gently asking the question why, because maybe they just don't know, or maybe that's not their demographic, or they're not in there, or a lot of diverse communities are not in that person's area. On the flip side, artists need to be very careful not to dismiss or brush aside, or I just wasn't trained that way, like it's not a big deal. I will tell you that the Black community has spent the most money in the beauty industry, from hair, makeup, nails, aesthetics, all the way around. So it's not like we don't have the money. We have the money. We just want groups of people to be able to give us the service.
I think it's really interesting that you mentioned demographic. And I think that's one thing that I see actually comes up almost as a defense very often in the beauty industry. Is it's like, well, my demographic this, my demographic that. So how would you say is the best way to balance what your demographic is and also specializing in services? So for me, when I used to get my hair colored, I went to someone who only did blondes exclusively. How do you balance that without having those microaggressions? What would be your best advice?
Well, if you're, let's for example, if your stylist was a master of doing blondes, that's amazing. But what would make that artist really unique is knowing that he or she could pull off a relaxer. They know how to do relaxers, or they know how to cut different curl patterns of hair. I feel like sometimes a lot of artists will master what may seem accessible or easy in a way. It's a understanding Black hair, Asian hair, Indian hair is different. And that's what would make you unique. And why do people leave so much money on the table? If you are a hairstylist, and I'm not just picking on hairstyles, this is makeup artists. This is, I have a background in sugaring. I can't assume that all hair is the same hair. I know that I'm working with different curl patterns, right? So again, it is basically to say, invest in yourself and stop leaving money on the table. And what makes you unique from anybody else who's a master artist in doing blondes?
Right. Makes a lot of sense. I hear a lot of podcasts, and you may have heard some of these, or just advice on social media of start putting out the images of the clients that you want to attract. And I feel like that may have become a little bit of a slippery slope and quite dangerous towards a more inclusive world, because it's always putting out almost copy paste. Every single client looks exactly the same. And that seems to work really well and be successful for some people. But do you feel like that's done some harm? I feel like it has, but I want to hear from you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm being mindful on how I ask this question or how I answer the question. There is a thing called greenwashing. Okay, so it's a sticker and paste on it. My thing is, if you're going to put up more, have a more diverse clientele, and you want to show all different shades, all different skin types and all of that, my next question is, do you know how to work with those skin types? Do you know how to work with those skin shades? Because I'm going to ask you. I am going to ask you. So you have to be able to back it up. It has to be more than just the latest Instagram post. It has to be more than just a reshare. We want to see that you're putting in the work.
No, I love that. That's a really good point. I know that there's some of my friends who are lash artists, where they're at, their portfolio always looks exactly identical. They just naturally gravitate towards who was in their area. And Cheryl and I were talking about this before the podcast, but I was saying that probably throughout my entire lashing career, I may have only lashed 3 Asian clients. And that I thought was really interesting. Whereas she was saying that if I lived in Vancouver, that would probably be the majority of my clientele too. And so I feel like I can lash Asian clients. I've taken courses on it. I understand the different hair patterns and everything. But yeah, I also wonder, how do you balance having that education? But then if you're really not good at it, are you doing a disservice by offering it? Like, how can you balance that? You know what I mean? So like, how do you do that? I think that's another slippery slope.
Yeah. If you're not good at it, then just be, here's the thing. Like before we got started, I said, I'm going to be very real, raw and authentic. I'm going to be, you know, if you're not good at it, then say that then. Nobody's going to judge you if you're not good at something, right? Like right. I can make the best pancakes, the best, perfectly round, nice and golden, just like what you see on the box. But if you were to ask me to, because I am of Jamaican descent, so we have something that we call fried dumplings. And so if you were to ask me to make fried dumplings round and golden and everything, as I will tell you, I'm not the one. I have tried. My husband has tested. My kids have tested. And they will always go back to their dad and say, Dad, can you make the fried dumplings? So just be open and honest about that and just say, you know what? And I'm going to work on it. I'm going to work on it until I get it right. But in the meantime, I'm not providing this service that I don't feel I have the confidence in, nor am I going to put up something to make one feel like that service is available and I don't know what I'm doing. The other smart thing is, because, you know, at the end of the day, we're in business and we want to bring money to the table. The other thing you can do is, why not hire somebody that can do it?
I really like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that too a lot.
Because expanding the inclusivity in your business doesn't mean you have to personally do it all, right? You can definitely expand your service profile so that people can, you can offer that service under the umbrella of your business without you needing to do it yourself, because some people are just genuinely, like you said, not good at making the dumplings, you know? Yeah, absolutely.
Real talk. Yeah. I think we as humans don't give each other enough credit for being honest and not getting into the old FOMO culture. You're not missing out anything if you don't know, right? And I feel like your clients will respect you so much more. And, you know, just the things, hire somebody that can do it, or refer to somebody that can do it, because it will come back to you tenfold if you just put yourself in a position to give, and then the receiving of that will come back. But when you're hiding, ducking and weaving, or profiling, or kind of like not being authentic in what you can do, but you're just putting up a picture so that people won't judge you or whatever, you're not going to get the outcome that you wished for or hoped for.
I know that, like, in my first question, you know, I have asked the difficulties about being in the beauty industry, and you share a lot of what you would like to see artists, how they treat people of color when they come into service. And that's a lot from the people who's getting the service, the customer's perspective. But I want to, since this is a real and raw conversation, I want to hear a little bit more about, from the artist's perspective, what are some of the ways that artists are experiencing, I guess, the difficulties in this beauty industry, maybe the non-inclusivity, and perhaps, I don't know if you personally have any stories to share with our listeners of your personal experience.
So to make sure I'm receiving this question correctly, you'd like me to share from the artist's perspective what challenges that they may have. Well, I can't speak for everyone, but I can speak definitely to the ones that I had the diversity in beauty conversation with. One of them is a lack of confidence. So if they don't have the confidence, and then there's a lot of that negative mindset that goes on, you know, if I don't have the confidence, then that means I'm not a very good artist, you know, what have you. Then there are the artists that just don't feel that it's relevant to them, unfortunately. And then there are the artists that you know what? I want to do what I need to do so that I can become more inclusive, because the challenges are, what if the color and the tone of the spray tan don't match? What do I do then? Or it's the challenge of, how do I get the clients to come in? Now that I've got all this experience, how do I get the clients to come in? How do I not look like I'm greenwashing? Well, I would then tell that artist that, host a live, get a guest on that's from the BIPOC community that has experienced your services, and talk about it. Share what your insecurities were and what the challenges were around it, because you need to build that know, like, and trust factor. And if you are showing up with diverse clients in your story, so not just a post, but an actual live, or having the questions or the feedback, reviews, and all of that, people are going to get to know you. Therefore, they will get to like you, and therefore they will get to trust you. Did that answer your question?
That definitely answered my question. But I also wanted to know a little bit more about being, you know, a people of color. Do you experience any challenges as a service provider? And that's kind of the part that I wanted to tease out a little bit more as well.
Okay, so have I experienced the racism? Have I experienced the microaggressions? Yes and yes. It's unfortunate, but it does happen. I can tell you, up to almost two years ago. Yeah, just like when we're in the height of the pandemic and we're open and we're closing out here in Toronto anyways. We were open, we were closing, we were open, we were closing. And I was providing sugaring services at a time at a boutique. And one lady had come in, and, you know, it's just one of those things where I just could feel what was going to happen. So I came up to the front, just getting ready to take the next client in. She happened to be there. And I said, okay, so what services are we confirming on today? And then she had proceeded to tell me, and then I had put her, you know, in the room to get ready. And then she came out and she said, is so-and-so going to be able to provide this service for me today? And I said, well, no, it's me, because the studio, they didn't allow us to book individually. Like, it's basically you book your appointment, but you get the person who is available at that time. I said, no, it's going to be me. The other person is, you know, with the client, and they're going to be at least over an hour, but I'd be happy to do this for you. It just went into one of those things. Well, then the long list of excuses came as to why I couldn't do it. And then the whole thing came out where it said, she had said, oh, and if it can't get done, then I want to speak to your manager. I am not here to fight with you. I am here to provide a service. It was very, I'm not comfortable with you. You could feel the whole essence. And when explaining to the manager about that situation, she was quick to say it was definitely not because you're Black. And I had to tell her, you are not me. You don't feel what I feel. You have not experienced this on this level. And I can tell you, it was everything because I am Black. And it's a feeling that we can't explain. It's a body language that we see. It's an undertone of sarcasm. It's calling for the manager as if, you know, you decide to leave today, that person's business is going to crumble. It is all of that. So the experience I've learned from that was, if you have a management team, your mission statement of diversity, equity, inclusion has to be on point. And that if your clients are upset that a person of color is going to be providing the service for you today, that we are no longer the person for you. You feel like you're going to be losing money, but you're not losing money. Actually, what you're doing is making room for those who want to spend real money. So that is something I'm very clear about, and that managers have to pull up, salon owners have to pull up. Salon owners need to defend their staff. Salon owners need to not dismiss and make things small. They need to set themselves in a way where their diverse team is part of the team.
Customer is not always right.
Goodness, are they ever though?
Hey, and you know, there's a saying out there that says not all money is good money.
That's right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I'm so sorry, Maria, that like that was your experience. And I know that you're not alone in experience like that, unfortunately. I've definitely hear a lot from my friends as well. And I personally have experienced a lot of racism, like in my life, you know, in my career. I'm not necessarily in the beauty industry, but in my other previous career. So I guess you have mentioned that, you know, one of the things that you like to see and you make it very important is for salon owners and especially owners that have hired their inclusive staff to stand up for their staff. And is there anything else that we can do, like whether salon owners, brand owners in this community, like what else that you would like to see the community do and what can we do to make sure that we are supporting truly the mission of inclusivity?
Yeah, I would definitely have to say, again, that mission statement and stand by that mission statement for sure. I would also say take the courses. Like, don't hire us just to take, for us to take the courses or because we are like braid extensionist, you know, artists. Like, don't just hire us because we can do braids. Learn from us too. Learn the care it takes. Look out for, you know, the small things like where the hairline is breaking or receding. Like, become part of it. If we have not had the conversation, please don't speak on our behalf for us. Ask us how we feel first. Don't speak on our behalf because your experience is not my experience. I can relate to Cheryl when she said the racism because we're two races that experience it and have, and our backgrounds, our culture, our everything has been at the height for the past few years. However, she may feel it differently than I do. I'll be able to stand by her and shed the same tears as her, but I will never be able to get to the root of her story, and she'll be able to never get to the root of mine. But the one thing we have in common is we know that we are diverse, so it's either we work together to become more powerful or else this thing isn't going to happen. So this change isn't going to happen. So it's really important for salon owners to make sure their mission statement is on point and they believe in that mission statement. You're investing in your BIPOC teammates to bring money through the door or what have you. Make sure you know what they're doing. You don't know nothing about relaxers, but you got like top relaxer black girl in your hair, in your salon doing all the hair stuff, but you have no clue on how it works. Ask the questions. And as I said before, if we haven't had the deep conversation, do not speak on our behalf. We don't need white saviors. We need white allies, if that makes sense.
It definitely does. Can you actually explain the difference? Because I think that's something a lot of people struggle with, understanding the difference.
Yeah. So a white savior is someone that feels like Black, Indigenous, people of color need saving. So we can't defend ourselves. We can't speak up for ourselves, right? So, or if we're dealing with a person that is unkind and racist, we're deciding in our head, what hill do we want to die on today? So sometimes we may look at that person and just roll our eyes and say, okay, and walk away. But then the white savior is like, hold on a second. You don't get to talk to my friend like that. Who do you think you are? Because they're white. And it's like, you're not going to talk to me like that. But what actually you just did was like, you basically confirmed in a roundabout way that you may be able to talk to this person of color like that, but you and I, we're both the same race, so you won't talk to me like that, right? And so we don't need saving, we just want support, right? If you want to fight that battle and I'm not there, okay, cool, you know, but don't step in and fight for me. I can fight my own battles, but support me. An ally is somebody, a perfect example would be, have you seen the movie? Oh my gosh, it just left my, oh, The Help. Have you seen the movie The Help?
Mm-hmm.
One of the main actors in there, she was working alongside Octavia Davis. And it came out in a way that they really wanted this one actor to be in the movie. And she had said, not if you're not going to pay Octavia properly. Because right now I'm getting paid way more than Octavia, and that ain't right. And that is allyship. You know what I mean? Like, that is what you're doing is so wrong right now. And believes it to the core. Believes it to the core. It is changing your marketing so that it is welcoming to every person, everybody, everybody. And because you believe in it, not because you don't want to look bad because you didn't make those changes. Allyship is paying your Black, Indigenous, people of color creatives fairly, not asking for a deal. It is staying connected beyond all of our different cultural months that we celebrate. So you are investing and believing and supporting beyond Black History Month, right? You are investing beyond all the hype seasons. That's allyship. As I was saying, it's just investing, being there as a support, standing up for what you know is right, not what looks right, and not respecting us enough to say, she's got this, or he's got this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm the white one in this group right now, and that is something that is, guys laughing at me, that's something that is always interesting because, you know, as we grow up, we want to stand up for our friends, no matter what color their skin is. And then I think that there is a balance of what comes from the soul versus what is just trying. And the manager thing really is a challenge. Anyone who's listening, it can be a challenge. I think one thing as a leader we always have to do with our staff is we need to pause. We need to have a moment to talk to our staff member and get the full story. Also, if you witness something as that manager, as that owner, you can shut it down immediately without even asking your staff member's opinion. I have definitely had that experience where I have just stopped mid-service and let a client go. And it's tough. It's not easy. But imagine what the narrative is that they're going to tell their friends. Are they going to openly admit that they got fired as a client because they're racist? And if they do, are those the clients you even wanted to have in your salon anyway?
Yeah, it's a season of house cleaning, if you ask me. Because we've all been in the industry at some level, and we've all had that one client where it's like, you know, if it wasn't for, you know, the food I have to put on the table today, I would literally not have you back. And I feel like all of this change and everything that's happening in the world today is the reason why you can do house cleaning. Now you can set the standards on what you will accept and what you won't accept in the industry, right? Or in your place of business. You can create a platform that literally works for you because there's something out there for everybody. Somebody will do it. What you won't do, somebody else will do. That's the reality of it all, right? But what feels really good is knowing that you have the power to say, no, now that doesn't work for me anymore. And you know what? I'm going to be okay because I'm not paying and I'm not going to let you pay me to be treated in this sort of way or to speak of a community in a way that I don't agree with.
Yeah. It's very similar to dating too. You know, we all have our own set of values. And when you're running a business, a fulfilling business is one that you should be able to bring your value forward and live by those value every day and let those people who don't share those value with you just fall away and shed away because those are not the people that you want to be exerting your energy with anyway. So, and the only way we can do that is by very clearly putting our value forward.
And knowing our worth too.
And knowing your worth, I think that it's one advice I would give is when a client is talking, our clients talk, and of course there are differences of opinions on certain topics, but knowing what is not okay for you. Because if that client opens up that conversation and you're just trying to be, let's say, professional, which to me is not professional, and you're just like, like that's really not going to cut it. I like to shut down those conversations right away, make that decision to let a client go. And then also using your voice to educate in the best way that you can. I think that's a huge thing and something that has not been a good fit for all my clients. And they know it. They're like, this girl's too intense. I'm out of here. And that's okay. But I do, as someone who is white, I like to open up that conversation with others so that they know they have a safe space to ask questions that maybe they're not aware of, and I can help provide them resources. There's a balance of that versus like finding those resources yourself. But when Black Lives Matter was really large over the pandemic, that was something that I just opened up on my story on Instagram. And I was really amazed how many people were messaging me, not knowing what to do, not knowing where to go for resources, not sure how to navigate, really questioning their own self-worth. So I think that we actually, as lash stylists, have a very powerful voice, and that we can really use that with our clients. We can connect all different ways with them, and this is a great way that we can.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree 110% with that. It's my husband lives by this saying, many hands make light work. If we all come together and help do the work, it's not so heavy for us as individuals, right? It's not so heavy. In my community, the Black community, we are not trending. We just are. We just are. We're not a trend. We're here to stay. The Asian community is here to stay. The Indigenous community is here to stay. The Hispanic community is here to stay. We're not going nowhere. And I was talking to my beautiful friend, and she is in BC, and she liked something on my social media, and you know, she is Indigenous. And I said to her, I'm like, listen, it's either they're going to have to give us a chair or the whole damn table. But either way, we're not going anywhere. We're not going anywhere. We are staying right here. Everybody deserves beauty. Everybody deserves beauty. And the one thing I wish and hope that people will get is that diversity is beauty. And within beauty, there is diversity, period. And so what was done 25 years ago is no longer being done the same way. So when people go to school for aesthetics, or if they're that person that wants to make a change in their career and they want to get into the beauty industry, know that you are providing a service for every living person. Whether they are in a wheelchair, whether they are wanting to, I don't know, whether they're in the curvy, sexy, curvy community, whether they are, you know, just whatever the diverse pillars are, these are the people that we are bringing services to. We are providing services to, so we can't think any other way but to provide the really best service and the best experience.
Well, thank you so much, Maria, for being on the podcast. I wish that we could have you for even longer. And I want our listeners to be able to reach out to you and see how they can connect with you. So what do you have upcoming? How can they reach you? And what can you offer for us?
Yeah, well, I am a diversity in beauty expert and coach. So if the people out there are interested on how to get to the next level with their business and becoming more diverse, they can check out my website at mariamichellelee.ca. I'm also on Instagram as @mariamichellelee, as well as if you're in the spray tan industry and you want to, you know, brush up becoming more diverse, being prepared to work on more clients with darker skin tones. I also have my own POC spray tan course, and they can find that in my bio as well on Instagram in my link tree.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Maria. It was a pleasure to have you on our podcast. Maybe we'll get to chat again in the future.
Well, I hope so. Thank you so much, Cheryl and Anne-Marie. This has been great. I hope it was received well and informative. I just, you know, if you know better, you want to do better. And I feel that every person I talk to, if we can change the world to make it what we want to see, I feel like there'll be a big change in the beauty industry.
That's all for this episode of Untamed. Thank you so much for joining us today. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at untamedartistry.com. Don't forget to subscribe. And remember, as your study buddy, we are always here for you. Don't hesitate to send us a DM at untamed.artistry.